Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have Emmanuel Rogers in conversation with New York Times bestseller Nelson DeMille and his son, award-winning screenwriter Alex DeMille. They authored The Deserter, the first in a series of thriller fiction. First, though, with April being Autism Awareness Month, this is a great time to hear about Impact Arts, a new program geared at artists, artists who fall somewhere on the autism spectrum. I spoke quite recently with KVCR's Lillian Vasquez, who helped develop the program.
Thank you, first of all, for allowing me time on your show to talk about this very important art program in my world.
Oh, yeah.
So what it is, this program is really for the individual with autism that loves art, is good at art, but they couldn't go to college because the academics would get in the way. This program doesn't have the academics, so all they can do is focus on their art. And maybe they're drawers or sketchers, and now we want to take them to do that, get better at it, and maybe paint or mosaic. It's just becoming more well-rounded in the art field. That's the crux of the program.
Okay, we'll tackle some of the ways in which folks can transform their love and their passion and their ability to create into a possible vocation for them. But let's talk about the program in and of itself. This couldn't be newer. As a matter of fact, it's just going to be opening its doors in May.
That's right. And let me just say, and I'm going to back up a little bit
Please.
Here. This has been my project for almost 4 years. Mm. I have, with my colleague that sits on the Autism Society, she and I have traveled to many different art programs throughout California. We went to San Diego, Camarillo, San Francisco, Pomona. We looked at so many different art programs that we wanted to have something here in the Inland Empire, and we wanted it to be well-rounded and get other ideas. So for a year, we did the scouting, and we did that. Then we wrote the proposal of what we wanted it to be. And at some point, it's going to be a six-hour program, 5 days a week, with the fifth day going out in the community. So going to museums, going to art galleries, going to stuff here locally, maybe in the Coachella Valley, here in the Inland Empire, and maybe into the LA Orange County region. And that's where we get out on Fridays. So we were ready to open up our doors last February.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing the call for students and individuals, artists to participate. And then COVID hit. And that was that. And we had to not open the doors. I say shut the doors, but we never opened them. And we couldn't move forward. So for a year, the woman that I'm working with, she owns a company that's called Inroads, and they serve individuals with disabilities. And she has just been an angel and allowed us to put this program together because, you know, I'm just a mom. I'm a mom that has a son with autism he's a gifted artist. That's his gig. That's his talent. He went here to San Bernardino Valley College, and he took all the art classes. He could not go further because it starts getting higher academics. He can't do that. But he loved coming, and he loved being in the classroom and being with the typical students. And they were so embracing to his artwork and his talents. And we ran out of classes, and I couldn't keep taking them over because it's not allowed. So I had to find something else and couldn't find anything else. So I created something else. And with my colleague, Beth Burt, and this woman with Inroads, she said, Lillian, I love the project. How do we make it work? So that's what it is. I mean, I did it for my son, but I know by doing it for my son, other families are going to benefit who have artists in their household that are autistic and can do this. So it's for the young adult. It's 18 or older. They don't have to be autistic, but many of them will be. They do need to be a Inland Regional Center client, which is the organization that pays for services for our Inland Empire area. They don't have to be, but if they're not, the program is kind of expensive because it's very 1-to-3 and 1-to-5 ratio.
You're talking about one teacher per maybe three or five students at the most. So it's close to one-on-one type
instruction. It's very close to that.
Okay.
So that's where we are. So all that to say is that's why we created it, was for my baby, so he'd have a place to go. It's a 2-year program. And after they go through the 2-year program, it's my hope that they will either be entrepreneurs, they'll be what we call micro-enterprising, have their own little business. They'll be able to learn, because not only is this program to build your art skills, which it is, but it's also to learn about the business of art, right? How to create that logo, how to market your stuff, what items are selling well. Even if you love making this item, but nobody's buying it, then maybe we try something else that you can do that you enjoy doing and try and sell it. Creating the website, creating the logo, coming to the knowledge that if you made something and it cost you $22 to make, you're not going to sell it for a dollar.
Not even to your aunt or grandma.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. So you have to learn how to, and this is really hard. This took me a while. I've talked to so many artists. How do you price your artwork? And they all said, that's really hard, you know? And so finally for Grant, what I came to do is when he gets a special request of something, I do it by how long it takes him. I do it on a minimum, like $12 an hour or something like that, whatever minimum wage is, times it by the number of hours it took him, add in so much money for the number of paints that he used, color of paints, right?
Okay.
That's how I came up with my pricing. But everybody is so different. And someone listening might say, $12 an hour, is that crazy? Well, you know, or someone else will say, $12 an hour? You're getting him $12 an hour? So that's what's so hard about the artist is coming up with that price. But that's what this class is about. You know, you do the creative stuff in the morning, and then in the afternoon, you would have the business side of art. One of the other things, once we open for good, is we hope to take students out on market night. Once Redlands opens up, things are really opening up, right? So we will go out to market night, and they'll be showing and selling their artwork and learning how to set up the booth, learning how to take it down, learning how to pack it up. All those things that so many of us take for granted. Oh, pack the stuff, let's go.
Yeah.
No, we have to teach them, what stuff do you want to take? Can you take, you know, everything you have in your inventory? No. Let's decide. Let's learn how to price it. And then maybe they go out to the market night and things aren't selling. Or maybe they all sold out the first night in the first 5 minutes because they priced it too low, right? So then we go back, we have the conversation and say, do you feel like you're making enough money based at that price? Should we raise it a little bit? Are you happy there? And just having those kind of conversations and teaching them the business of art.
They're really looking at these if-then aspects to it. If this is going, why is that? These are all teachable moments. Most things that we go through are teachable moments, but that's what this is specifically. You mentioned about this program. It's not just about the teaching of the entrepreneurship, but there's also the arts and developing that side as well. So at first, I think I was thinking of this program as a place where the artistically gifted would be coming in and learning how to be able to sell and go to the market, et cetera, and more, like we were just discussing. But it sounds like also this is a place for folks to be able to develop the art side itself. Go from one stage of, let's just say drawing, for example, go from one stage of drawing to be able to improve that somehow.
Right. So there is an application process. They do have to submit their artwork like a portfolio.
Okay.
But it's really, this is not for the person that wants to do arts and crafts. It's not a crafting thing. You know, they're not, you know, it's, let's say you sketch. Well, let's introduce acrylics to you. Let's introduce colored pencils to you. So maybe in the morning class they have painting. And then in the second class they have mosaics or they have sketching.
Okay.
And they rotate the classes, right? So it'll be a 5-day-a-week program, and they're learning more than what they know, hopefully, coming in, to by the time the 2-year program is over, they'll have better skills. They may still love what they're doing, and maybe that didn't change. Maybe we didn't move the needle, and they still want to do that one thing.
Okay.
But I say that because when Grant first started drawing, he would only work with markers, Sharpies, right? And he would draw it, outline it in markers, and color it in markers. What got hard is Grant draws very big pieces, and markers wouldn't last as long. And he'd get frustrated and go left and go right, and his images would be trying, he's just trying to fill in that space. So then we introduced some acrylic paints. And he could do it faster, right? He could get the blue on there and cover the whole sky rather than with the marker going little by little by little, right? So that was one thing. And then we introduced watercolors. and, you know, adding the water element and watching the colors kind of spread out and be a little more rainbowish. And so that's what it's about. Maybe they come in with their Skechers and they want to do Disney and Pokemon and the things that they love. This is saying, no, we're going to go take a picture with our cameras. We're going to bring that item in and then we're going to draw it. You know, so it's not using copywritten stuff, even though Grant would love to draw Disney all day long. He can't technically sell that, right? You're not supposed to. It's copywritten. So this is about maybe there's a photography class where we're learning how to take a photo, how to frame it, and then bring it back in and draw that or paint that. That's what it's about. And the goal is after 2 years that they can either start their own business or work for somebody else using their art in some capacity, or trying to take their skills that they've learned and how to generalize it in their life, or just bring them happiness, right? Bring them joy and making their day feel fulfilled. Maybe they'll look forward to the Thursday night market night where the four students go out, because it'll rotate every week. Four students would go out, so they always get a chance. Now, because of COVID, we get to open up with two students.
This program is opening up with two students.
Two students.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, that's, you know, 25% or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Okay. We have to stay. We can grow to six. The class was originally geared for 24 students, and that's what we have. We have three rooms where they can be doing the lesson part or the drawing part, you know, so there's three areas. Because we can't open to that capacity, we have to be at the 25%. And so we have two students right now. I need to get those doors open so I can show it off to more parents. And that's why I'm so grateful for right now. I'm hoping people listening will think, oh, that's a great program for my son or my daughter. And David, we've had this discussion. As we know, autism is far more common in boys than in girls.
Yes.
Right now, the numbers are 1 in 54, with four times more in boys, for sure. So I'm hoping parents will say, this is a good way for my son or my daughter to spend their day. The other thing it's modified right now is we're only open from 9 to 12. It's only a three-hour program.
Okay.
But I'm just thrilled to open the stinking doors.
Finally. Yes.
Let me just open the doors.
Well, 3-4 years in the making, and it was ready to go a year ago and had to suddenly stop it. You were just chomping at the bit to get this thing going. You had the keys. You were ready to turn it.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I do have the keys, and I have gone in there, and I keep adding more materials or canvases or paint thinners, or I keep putting more things in the stock room, and I'm like, I just need the artists to come in.
Yep.
When we're at full capacity, we will have visiting art teachers come in. Let's say we have our steadies that know autism, that know autistic characteristics, that can handle that part.
Potential behaviors.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then we'll bring in artists maybe out of the Yucaipa Quest Art Gallery. Maybe there'll be a visiting teacher from there, or maybe the Redlands Art Association, or maybe the Rancho Art Association. We'll have different teachers come in and teach something for the semester for 3 weeks, and it's their project. So the idea is to really let them see what all art is. They're coming in with what they do, and we want to expose them to so much more.
Okay. Speaking of exposure, you mentioned really, really wanting to show the place off to people. There is actually a video out there that we had a wonderful videographer take. How about a website for more information where they can see this video showing, all I can picture is the storeroom. It shows so much more, but there's a video presentation for this place now.
So I'm hoping you're going to post it at KVC Arts, and that's where they'll see it. It's not really posted anywhere else. It's what I've been using to send to parents, because I haven't had the open house where I wanted to show people, come in, this is the place. Because of COVID, I've had to pivot as well and send this out to parents, like, this is what it looks like, just to give them a visual and to get the artist who might be coming a visual. Okay. Their anxiety is going to be high. They haven't been to the location. So if they can watch the video, and I have to say, it's not a well-shot video. Shireen, our colleague, has shot it on my phone, so we would have something to show. And that's what it is. It's just a video to kind of calm some of the people, the parents, as well as the young artists, to say, this is where we're going to go. This is what we're going to do. And to begin with, we're going to do it COVID style, right? So we will have to wear our masks the entire time. I'm not in there. My son is in there with the teacher, but they will have to wear their masks. We're hoping people will get vaccinated and go through this process. We don't have a lunch break, so it's 9 to 12, and then we're done for the day, as we are in this COVID. Once they let us loose, it'll go back to a six-hour-a-day program with a couple of breaks and a lunch, because that's the other part. The other thing we wanted this program to do was create socialization. Our families, my family and families like mine, are desperate for our sons and daughters to have outlets and socialization time. So if they're in the classroom, they're having lunch together. They might go to the Walmart across the street or the Applebee's or one of the lunch places together to take their break. They'll be doing the market nights and socializing. And whether that socializing looks like parallel, meaning they're at the same place at the same time, they're not talking to each other, but they're parallel each other. It's trying to expose them to that. I know my son misses his high school years when he saw the same people every day and they knew him, he knew them. So that's what this program is intended for. And hopefully when they leave, they've learned more than when they started and they're able to start their own business or work in that capacity, or at least do fairs, you know, like the music fairs where you can have a booth and show your artwork.
And this goes beyond being in school to give a child a routine, but this is also the socialization element, and that is part of the mission statement, in that this is not only a learning tool or program for these people, but it is also something to improve quality of life, not just for the person who is on the spectrum, but for the family living with that person. Because the family is on the spectrum. If you've got a kid that's on the spectrum, it's affected everybody. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and NPR One, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Later in the program, we'll hear from Emmanuel Rogers in conversation with New York Times bestseller Nelson DeMille and his son, award-winning screenwriter Alex DeMille, authors of The Deserter. First, though, back to Lillian Vasquez and more on Impact Arts. More information soon to be found at in-roads.net or by calling 909-864-1551. We'll have that information again later in the program.
The company who has been supporting me on that, the woman's name is Sharon Barton. She has a love and a heart for those with special needs, and her company is InRoads. In-Roads, InRoads. And there may be information at her website, but there will be information at our website at KVC Arts, just showing the program.
Yes, it'll be at kvcrnews.org/arts, and we will have links to where folks can find more information. Now, just a little bit about autism and the students. And so since autism is such a wide range, I hope folks don't just have this one picture in mind anymore of, quote, the autistic individual, and that picture is usually the most severe or the most gifted, the savant type, the one that can tell, you know, there's 192 matchbooks or whatever the case is at a glance. But it is such a wide range, and that's why we talk about the autism spectrum disorder. It is quite a range. And so we've got some of the kids that will be coming in here, some of the students at this program. They will be able to absorb this information and learn how they can take their sketches, which have evolved into paintings or whatever, and be able to sell it and take these ideas and maybe run with it. Others do not have that ability, frankly speaking. So in a situation like this, with a person who is well over at that end of the spectrum where they aren't able to comprehend as much, yet they still have all that wonderful, wonderful artistic ability, like Grant, for example, is this program open for the parents to come in with the students to learn how to help market their child's works?
Right. So it is not open to the parents in that they are 18. We want them work functioning as adults. However, you know, with Grant stuff, we sell note cards, we sell puzzles, we've made magnets, we've made posters, we've made all kinds of things because I'm involved with his artwork. Mm-hmm. What we're hoping is that some of the parents will say, okay, how do I do that? How do I take his information and his gift or his or her talent and do something with it? And that's where, you know, our teachers maybe have to work with the parents and say, this is what you need to do. Because you said earlier, when you have someone in your family with autism,
yes.
your family has autism, yeah. right? It encompasses the entire household. And so that's where I'm hoping that families will say, I need to learn how to do this. And you bring up a really good point that I hadn't thought of, and that is maybe we have a one night where we teach the parents what we're trying to do. If they have that kind of support system and we're teaching right. the parents, then they'll catch on. And I'm guessing that a lot of the parents would come out on a market night and look at what we're doing and build from there, ask us questions, and hopefully make it a win-win situation all the way around.
Most certainly. Wow. You mentioned earlier that before a student is accepted into the program, there will be things like showing a portfolio and items like that. There's a statement in here somewhere. The person responsible for admissions will be interviewing the client and his or her authorized representative. What type of interview would this be? What's going on? Is this also the assessment where you're sort of looking at the person and seeing if they are? Well, there are criteria. I mean, there's toileting and dressing and grooming. And,
right.
and there are all these various functions. So is this as much of an assessment as it is an actual conversation interview?
Yes. So the other student that is involved, we talk to the mom, we talk to the sister, we ask questions because the young man isn't able to have that conversation, but they know what he or she can do. So we ask those questions. They need to be toilet trained. If they take meds, they need to be able to take their meds themselves. We're not administering those kinds of things. So those are some of the technical things. This program is not for everyone. You know, this program is for, like I said, the individual that could go to college. And if you remove the academics, they'll do well. That doesn't mean that meltdowns won't happen and they're not going to be kicked out. That doesn't mean they won't have a bad day and they're just not drawing today, because that's going to happen. It's an understanding program for individuals on the spectrum. And as you've described, the spectrum is so vast, right? And if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Because,
thank you.
You know, we're all so different. Yeah. There'll be things in this class that Grant won't be able to do. There'll be things that he will be able to do and he'll soar.
Yes.
You know, there'll be things in this class that he might, like if we got into sculpture, he won't want to touch the clay. You know, that's
yeah.
just his, it's the tactile and he won't like it. So he won't take that class. He'll mm-hmm. take another class. And that's what it's about. But there are some things that they do, you know, there are some requirements. It's not open to every single person as much as I'd love it to be. It's who we're really trying to take that artist and just give them that many more skills to make it a business.
Okay, wonderful. Well, again, this is just going to be opening its doors in May, and with California moving to the various tiers of reopening, and it looks like, knock on wood, we will be going into the next tier within the next a week or two or so as the time of this airing. So hopefully this will go from then a 3-hour program per day to the 6-hour, the model that it was intended.
Right. If someone is listening right now,
okay.
they have an autistic son or daughter, and they're saying, oh, that would be great mm-hmm. for my daughter. They need to contact their regional center, their Inland Regional Center rep. They contact the regional center, whoever is their case manager, and say, I want to know more about this art program. And they have vendor numbers. They share a vendor number with them, and I'm going to just say it. The vendor number is P as in Paul, J5106. Dave, if we can put that on your website,
yep.
then we will. That's what they need to call their rep and say, my daughter or son wants to be in this program. They then do the paperwork. They then send it to Inroads, and that's how the process starts. It really starts with your son or daughter wanting to be in the program, must be over 18, and contacting their regional center case manager.
So this is the new program. That is the Impact Arts Program. It's located in Redlands. We didn't tackle that. That's just sort of behind the Thai House, just off of Redlands Boulevard. I guess that's near New York or Nevada Street, somewhere in there.
Yep.
The Impact Arts Program finally getting going. And
yeah.
this is going to be really great for a lot of people and for the families of a lot of people as well. And now, there are a variety of autism societies that a person might hear of. If you just Google it, you're going to get something at the national level, the local level. What is our local, this our regional?
Yes, so it's ieautism.org for Inland Empire, ieautism.org. And that is our local organization. It's a national organization. That's our local chapter. They serve the Coachella Valley and the Inland Empire region. And as you mentioned, April is National Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month. We've added the acceptance part. And so we have a few things going on. If you go to ieautism.org, they have a walk, a virtual walk going on. It's a fundraiser, right? They're another organization that have pivoted to try and keep them afloat. And so there's a virtual, it's taking place because it's virtual. It's taking place in the entire month of April. I want to mention this other business. There's a business in Rancho Cucamonga that last Friday, they held a pedal spin studio fundraiser.
What is this?
That's what I said. I said this. Same thing. So it's a business in Rancho Cucamonga. It's called Pedal Spin Studio. And they're going to ride their bikes, pedal their bikes. Okay. It's an exercise, which is why I didn't know it because
I never exercised. Okay.
Yes.
Spin, gotcha.
That's
okay,
exactly
okay.
A spin studio. So last Friday, they held a fundraiser. A lot of people out there riding their bikes in support of autism. There's things out there. The biggest thing we're asking is to create the awareness of autism. I'm hoping by now that so many more people know of it. KVCR used to have a autism initiative. We no longer have that, but we can still talk about autism. Autism is still in our world. You probably by now know someone with autism, either in the classroom, at your church, maybe a neighbor, a niece or a nephew, or you're living with it every day. I'm hoping more people know, at least know the word and know a little bit about it.
This is, you know, we had, and I do want to address this, and Lily and I can do this without getting in trouble. As you mentioned, at one point, KVCR as an entity was much more involved in the autism community in that we had an autism initiative and links and more. But then our autism initiative and our veterans initiative was dissolved by a third party, no longer with Community College District. But the monies raised through those initiatives still ended up being absorbed elsewhere. And so this is why folks who used to turn to KVCR for information and resources and more with regard to autism are seeing less of a presence. So still, though, today, this is an opportunity to get some of this info out there to folks since those opportunities were taken away from us. You mentioned the autism walk. This is something that I used to look forward to year after year. The first time I got involved, it was a rock autism. There was a music event, some bands and stuff. And then it became, over the last several years, a superhero walk for autism. And I enjoyed this for a number of reasons. I would enjoy going and drawing puzzle pieces on people. But then for the superhero walks for autism, I would take some of these puzzle pieces and turn them into superheroes or a superhero-related something or other. And it was something that I enjoyed doing, but then I found out that people enjoyed it happening as well. And so there were a number of reasons. So this virtual walk, this really puts a damper on me drawing puzzle pieces. How exactly will this work then? You said it kind of goes on through the whole month. You videotape yourself and say, hey, I'm doing it.
Or you take your own walk. Yeah, it's a fundraiser, so you're going to go in, you're going to sign up, pay some fee to support it, and then document yourself or post it, put it on Facebook, put it on your Facebook, tweet about it, and just say that we're creating awareness about our sons and daughters, nieces and nephews throughout the month of April.
Other autism-related activities that are at this point just in the planning stage that you're hoping for, not putting a jinx on it, but maybe we can talk about it anyway, or gosh, even in the stage of, hey, wouldn't it be great if?
So,
what are some things you'd like to see happening?
So, you know, we had one of our best autism walks, and we did it right here on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College.
Yeah.
The campus was wonderful to us. They were great to work with. It was probably our most successful walk. We hope that next year, that's exactly where we're going to be doing it again. And hopefully you'll be out there with your Sharpies drawing on people's arms and legs and whatever, all the puzzle pieces and the superheroes. So that's what we have to look forward to. We'll go back to having our coloring project where businesses throughout the Inland Empire have their puzzle pieces in their business, small businesses where people can pay $1 or $5, sign their name to the puzzle or color the puzzle and be posted. So that's coming. We have plans for that next year. God willing, that's where we'll be.
Lillian has another interview coming up in just a few minutes, but this is an opportunity for her to push some of Grant's work, so I think we can keep her here for a few moments. You alluded to Grant doing this every so often, showing his work at a booth or here or there.
he's not high functioning, which would be one end. Absolutely. He's not low functioning, which is, some people don't like that type of description, but I feel like it really gives it. He has language. He can do things. He, you know, he has his chores that he has to do. He's fully capable. He definitely has opinions and he's willing to share it in meltdowns. Yeah. I must say, in all seriousness, with this pandemic, it has been an absolute hell for him because he didn't have his routine. He didn't have his places that he goes to work. He didn't have so much. So this pandemic has really been an enormous challenge on our family and on Grant. But talking about his artwork, yes, one of the things that we do have is the sandwich shop near Valley College.
Too, yes.
My Hero 2 displays his artwork and he sells some of his artwork there, takes donations and does this thing there. And he gets many requests, strangely enough. He gets a lot of requests. So that's where one place where his artwork is. And I'm hoping when things open up again, we'll be back at doing the music circuit, the art circuit, and yeah, have his artwork there again. He loves going and drawing. He doesn't like standing up or breaking down, but he'll sit there and draw, and people will come and watch his artwork. Just kind of like when you're at Disney and they're doing the sketches of people, yes, the caricatures, people will watch his artwork come to life. And it makes me feel so good. There's no time in my life when I'm happiest is when I'm watching Grant do his art, because he's very much in the zone. He's happy, and yes, he's as typical as he's going to be. Yeah. And he joins others, and his art does that. His art gives him a voice. His art gets to show his skill and his ability.
Yes, it brings him joy, it brings you joy and fulfillment, and a lot of other people too. I'm proud to have several of his pieces on my walls at home. He's a wonderful artist. I really, really appreciate his work. And it's true about watching him work. It's funny, it's like watching a Bob Ross show, for example. You know how if you turn your head away for a few moments and then you turn your head back and watch the painting and all of a sudden there's a happy little sky with two trees and he needs a friend. We need a tree there. Watching Grant is like that as well. You look away for a second, and then you turn your head again, and suddenly there's Pooh and Eeyore and Piglet, and all that was there before was an ear,
yeah,
or something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. He draws pretty fast, too.
Incredibly so. And so a lot of his artwork has been put together on calendars that a person can purchase. Where can a person find these calendars or some of his other artwork? Does he have a website yet?
No, his sister is supposed to create his website. She's been meaning to get on that for the last 5 years. And I just scolded her the other day. I said, you know, your brother really needs a website.
And her initials are Lindsay.
She needs to get on that.
Yeah, okay.
But now that she's a mommy and has two kids, she's trying to balance it all. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, seriously, though, his calendars, though, you can order those, right?
We can order those. He has a Gmail account. It's grantw.art@gmail.com. Grant W, because that's how he signs his name, grantw.art@gmail.com.
Wonderful, wonderful. And now then, I guess to close, we mentioned so many autism societies around the country, around the region, and around the world, I suppose, too, really. Many of these communities are independent of each other, but there, of course, is a common goal and common sense of purpose. Even though there are, we mentioned that there are many, many organizations out there at the national level and regional level, it would be really easiest just to say a person could go to Autism Society Inland Empire and then springboard to the national or to other links and organizations. So please, the website for that one more time.
ieautism.org.
Wonderful. Lillian, thank you so much. I appreciate doing this, and I appreciate you doing this. And every so often, I speak with musicians, these living legend types, and it turns out they've got an autistic kid themselves. And so we look at them clowning and being a monster guitarist on stage, and at home, they're a dad dealing with a 10-year-old with autism that, yeah, communicates in different ways. And so there's just, I don't know what my point was to saying that, other than there's just a lot more out there. Here's an even better way to close. The numbers, you mentioned 1 in 54. The numbers when you got involved, let's say 27.5 years ago versus now.
1 in 5,000.
It was 1 in 5,000 roughly 28 years ago.
It was 1 in 10,000, and then very quickly it was 1 in 5,000. Then it was 1 in 250, and it stayed at 1 in 250 for a little bit, and then it's now today 1 in 54.
Not very long ago, I did a drawing on somebody. It was simply a puzzle piece, and underneath the puzzle piece it said 1/68. It was 1 in 68, And then that was for individuals. But even at that point, it was 1 in 58 for boys.
Right.
Lillian, thank you again. I really appreciate your time.
David, thank you for allowing me, because I certainly couldn't do this on my show, so allowing me the airtime to talk about my baby, who I love so much, and autism.
That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. Again, more information will be available at in-roads.net, also at 909-864-1551. Again, that's 909-864-1551, also in-roads.net. Also, the artwork by Grant Weisgarfer. More can be seen on his Instagram page, at Grant W. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and NPR One. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. Let's go now to Emmanuel Rogers with more on the first book in a new series of thriller fiction.
Joining us today are authors Nelson DeMille and Alex DeMille, a father and son team. Nelson, a prolific author, and Alex, an Academy Award nominee, teamed up to bring us their book, The Deserter. Nelson, Alex, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Emmanuel. Thanks. Good to be here.
You are more than welcome, and I'm glad to have you here. Nelson and Alex, how did the two of you, father and son, come to work together on this book, The Deserter?
I got a phone call one day from my father, and he said, "How would you like to make some money?" And I said, "What do I have to do for it?" And he explained that he was, you know, I knew he had been looking to collaborate on a book with someone, and he'd been working with his publisher, but they were having a little difficulty. He didn't really find somebody who clicked. So eventually he approached me with an idea to create two new characters, Army criminal investigating special agents, who would be looking to track down a notorious Army deserter who had been found resurfacing in another country. So that was kind of the germ of the idea, which was inspired by the Bo Bergdahl case. But as he and I developed the story, it kind of departed from there. It was an incredible opportunity. It took me a minute to think about, A, am I capable of this? B, are we going to be able to work together? And I knew I would have a lot to learn from you. I wanted to make sure I also had things to contribute. But
right.
I think after we talked about it and we worked out the broad strokes of this book together, we both were excited about it. We realized this is something we could do.
Now, how was it working together with your dad?
It was educational. It was,
okay.
You know, it took a little time for us to figure out a good system. And, you know, I wasn't looking to copy his voice, you know, but at the same time, I've grown up with his books and to some degree internalized his voice and also seen his process and working on his books all these decades. So, yeah, we basically landed on was that I was going to be writing the first draft of pretty much every chapter and then passing them on to him. And he would do his work and pass it on to me. And it's essentially how we wrote the entire book. And every once in a while, we'd both step back and read everything. And then we do an in-person meeting so we could kind of have a mini story conference and decide what the next steps were going to be. Because I wanted to make sure he knew where I was going before I departed.
All right. Now, before we get into the book, The Deserter itself, I still have just a couple more questions. And Nelson, this one's for you. You have written 21 novels, six of which were number one New York Times bestsellers, including The Cuban Affair and The General's Daughter. What is your style of writing?
Good question. I don't stay with the same genre, for one thing. I've written espionage novels, I've written detective novels, I've written serious novels, I've written romances. So, you know, I kind of skip around. Also, I still use a pencil and paper to write my novels. I don't type well. So I have yellow pads and I have number one soft pencils, and that's how I write my books. I do my research the old-fashioned way often with the library books. Worked for me for 40 years, and I kind of stay with it. A lot of people ask me, you know, when do you write? When's your good time for writing? For me, I'm more of a night writer than a morning writer.
Okay.
I tend to write late afternoon into early evening, sometimes late evening. They say, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
This is what I've been doing. I know technology has come along. I know we have computers now. And but I do it my way. But yet, with Alex is, you know, much younger, obviously, and he's into the new technology stuff. What he did was he wrote first draft on a computer, and he emailed it to me. And I kind of worked with it from the printout. And then I would scan it and send it back to him, and that's the process that we used. He wrote first draft of every chapter, as opposed to alternate chapters as some collaborators try to do. But I found that writing, just doing first draft, me doing second draft, was a good way to do it. Collaboration is always tricky.
Yes.
With all kinds of possibilities of offending somebody's ego, but we're still speaking to each other. We're going to have Thanksgiving dinner together.
Okay, I can actually hear some of your humor coming through as you speak that I've also seen in your book. So thank you for that. It's it takes me back to some military days. Now, I understand, Alex, that you primarily work in film. Do you have plans to produce and direct any of the work that you or that you and your dad have created?
Well, it's definitely something we're thinking about. At the moment, I'm focusing on, first of all, of course, this book, and then we have pretty much finished an outline for what will be a sequel to The Deserter with the same two characters on a new case. So that's going to pretty much be taking up my time and creative energy for this foreseeable future. But I definitely could see this book as a film or a limited series potentially, and it would be interesting to adapt, certainly.
Yeah, I actually watched some of your short films and your work, and I think, wow. You know, this guy really should come up and do some of these stories that you guys have already written and some of the things that you're working on, because I think you would do a good job. I really do.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, they're fun stories. I mean, the characters, and the characters my dad's created in his other books are great. There are a lot of interesting settings and a lot of opportunity for fun visuals, too. So I think they're cinematic, I think, inherently, his books.
Yes. Yes, now I have to move to a different thing here, and I'm going to ask you guys, will you take just a moment to share with our audience where they can find more information about your book, The Deserter? And if you'd like to include podcasts or other things, please let us know.
Okay, well, you can go to my father's website is nelsondemille.net, and my website is alexdemille.com, and there's links to purchase on both of those sites, and
okay.
There's also links to all of our social media accounts, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and also contact forms if you want to contact us directly.
Oh, wow. Okay, thank you. Now, I do understand that this book is based on the Bo Bergdahl case. What was it about that case that drew the both of you to write about it?
Well, and you were in the military, so...
Yes.
I'm sure when Bo Bergdahl deserted his post in Afghanistan, he was thinking what I was thinking. Like, what was this man thinking?
Yes.
To desert your post in a hostile environment and wander off, either to join the Taliban or to get captured by the Taliban, it made no sense to me. I was in Vietnam for a year.
Yes.
And it never crossed my mind that I should desert my men as an officer and wander off into enemy territory to be captured by the Viet Cong. I couldn't understand what his motivation was, and I kind of stuck in my mind and stuck in my craw a little bit, too.
Yes.
So, you know, when it came time to create this new series with two Army criminal investigators, they needed a case to work on. And I thought this would be a good case. A man who deserted and was captured by the Taliban, spent 2 years in captivity. But I changed it that he was out exchanged for another prisoner, which is with the Bergdahl case. How that ended. My character of Kyle Mercer, who's a Delta Force captain and the deserter, resurfaces years later or a year later in Caracas, Venezuela. And my two characters that Alex and I created are Army criminal investigators again. And they're tasked with going to Caracas, finding the Bo Bergdahl character, who we named Kyle Mercer, Special Forces captain, arresting him and bringing him back to justice. So that was, you know, again, the Bergdahl case is the genesis of this, and we just, like good novels, took it a little bit further and made it a little bit more interesting than the real case was.
Yes, yes, and you actually did, but it's still just as sad as thinking about the real case when you read this. Now, why was Venezuela too dangerous for you to scout?
Well, I originally was planning on going, and I started doing research, and I picked it because it was dangerous. That would be an interesting place to have to make our heroes operate, obviously, but some places are dangerous in a kind of ordered way, where if you don't want to cross the government because then you might get arrested, and other places are dangerous because they're anarchic. And Venezuela is both. I mean, you have a hostile government and a corrupt police who would just as soon kidnap you as any you know, gang or militia in the country. So I was talking to a number of Venezuelan expats who are now in the States, and they all told me, I asked all of them, I said, should I go? And they all said, no, you're crazy. You're, you know, if you're if you're lucky, you'll be kidnapped. So I, and they all had their own terrible stories about the kind of the moment that made them realize they had to leave. Nobody wants, you know, it's hard to leave your home, even if it's difficult to be there. So just decided that it was not worth it. And I could do, given the wonders of the internet, plus all of the books and articles out there, and I think most critically talking to Venezuelans, we could replicate this place without having to go.
So how would that be for an American military deserter to go to a place like Venezuela? How would it be for that person?
That was one of the mysteries of the story. That's what they keep asking. The CID keeps asking,
yeah,
why did a man leave a place like Afghanistan where he spent 2 years in a Taliban prison and go to a place like Venezuela, which is itself kind of a hell on earth? And that's the mystery of the story that two CID people were trying to find out. It's not just finding him, it's finding out the why. Why did this man get there?
Yeah, and why did he desert? There's a lot of whys. But all, none of his behavior makes sense. So that's, I think, is always a good way to start a mystery, with a character who does something that makes no sense, and you have to find the sense in it. So that's where we were with him. And I think, you know, an American civilian going to Venezuela is inherently vulnerable. Obviously,
yes,
you're a target for kidnapping. Somebody like our character, Kyle Mercer, who's used to operating in dangerous territory and is kind of intimidating himself, might, we imagine, could hold his own and be able to navigate those waters, so to speak.
Well, you know, your book is well written. It really is. And I wish we had more time to talk about the things that your main characters were doing. But I would just like to congratulate you guys. As a former military man, this is a good book, and I think it translates well for the civilian audience. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Manuel. Good to be with you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to what you have coming out next. I really enjoy the humor that goes along with the seriousness of this book, and I can't wait to see what the two of you come up next. So take your moment and do it well, Mr. and Mr. DeMille.
Thank you so much.
You have a great day.
That was Emmanuel Rogers in conversation with New York Times bestseller Nelson DeMille and his son, award-winning screenwriter Alex DeMille. The Deserter and more at nelsondemille.net. With that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Nelson and Alex DeMille, and of course, Emmanuel Rogers. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. Many past KVC Arts programs can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and NPR One. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can now tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.